TFM.
Fun will now commence.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Journey, our dedicated Star Trek Voyager podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I'm happy to tell you that I've upgraded my setup for this recording. It only involved 50 gigaquads of computer memory, and I would be happy to take you through the process, but it would take at least 10 hours to explain it all to you.
Well, that's really weird, Chris, because, you know, it also just, this upgrade, are you in some sort of Victorian English home?
That you I also am. What's my new house?
That's a strange upgrade, Chris.
I moved. It involved a little bit of time travel, but yeah.
See you later, Japan!
That's right. I wanted to move somewhere where I would just be bossed around all the time.
So. Oh, well, I mean, you've come to the right place.
All right, everyone. We'll talk about that a little more at some point today, but we're going to be discussing the 12th episode of Season 1 as we continue our Star Trek Voyager 30th anniversary rewatch. This is Cathexis, and here is a quick rundown of the story. While Captain Janeway shacks up in ancient England, Chakotay has an out-of-body experience. There's been an attack on the shuttle he was riding around in with Tuvok, and while the Vulcan suffered only a concussion, all of Chakotay's bioneural energy has been drained, and he has fallen into a coma. The doctor says he can keep him alive, but nothing more, since his brain is dead. That's when B'Elanna turns to a medicine wheel to save her old friend. So, Matthew, Victorian England aside, we'll talk about that at the end. The story here, it starts out with, of course, Chakotay seems to be brain dead. I thought it was funny that actually Robert Beltran has referred to this episode as my big coma episode.
Yes, the one where I took a nap.
That's right. I had so much to do in this episode. So this story, I mean, it's interesting. We've talked about it off and on through season one here about they had this idea of having a Native American as bridge crew on this show, and not only as part of the crew, but he's the first officer. And yet their willingness to really explore what that means always seems to be lukewarm or timid, I guess is how I would describe it. And then here, you know, they come up with the idea that, well, to get him out of the coma, B'Elanna is going to bring his medicine wheel into sickbay. So it seems promising, but then the medicine wheel itself seems to be some sort of mishmash of medicine wheels from various tribes from North America. And of course, later on, we'll find out that actually Chakotay's heritage comes from Central America. So what do you think about this aspect of the story and what it does for his character? And if maybe the writers should have just picked a tribe from the start so they could properly develop this angle.
I mean, I don't think that idea is bad. You know, I think if you want to be able to explore this and to be able to have that representation on screen, I think that's really interesting. You know, I think though that just succinctly, if you don't choose a specific tribe to go with, or at least in a region that Chakotay is from, then you're going to end up with this place where I think you, it just feels like, you know, a lot of these days you hear the discussion of things being just like a skin suit, you know, like that's just a thing wearing pretend clothing, you know, of whatever.
I thought you were talking about the visitors from the... Because wear skin suits also.
Exactly. Not that. Yeah. And I really kind of think that that becomes the issue with Chakotay and their choice to not nail down where he's from right away, because you're doing like faux Native American, because you're trying to create an amalgamation of all of it. And yet, you know, each of these tribes, especially in North America, have a long storied history with their own histories and traditions, and the way their culture work was different from, you know. And so to try and just combine them all together, honestly, I feel like, and I'm not Native American, but it just seems kind of disrespectful for their handling of this. And so, one, like you mentioned, just choose a specific tribe to go with. And then that allows you to be able to dive deeply into their spiritual beliefs and be able to utilize that on screen in a way that feels authentic, right? I mean, I think one of the things that, you know, you juxtapose this with the use of religion on Deep Space Nine, and because they're making it up whole cloth, right, it allows them to create this as needed, but it also allows them, because of the different characters they have, to show, you know, those that are fully devoted followers of the prophets and those that are just utilizing the prophets for their own benefit, and all the things in between when it comes to the idea of faith. And I think that's really helpful because, again, they're not beholden to anything because they're just making it up. Here, it's like, well, you're making it up, but you're trying to base it off real things, and you're kind of stealing from different places. And in the end, you're not doing a good job of that. And I think it's just kind of a disrespectful way to handle this. And it is frustrating that that's the case because, you know, I think, again, the idea of the way that they had kind of set this up with, you know, TNG and the tribes that we saw in that show, for them too, there was never any indication of specifically where they had come from other than that they were, you know, from the North American region. And so, it's odd. It's an odd choice. It's odd. And I think it's not a great choice.
Well, I think with what they did on TNG, that was okay for the story because we weren't going to be spending a lot of time with these people. So they didn't need to get too specific. But when you establish a lead character, one of your main characters, and they're going to have this background, I think you need to plan it out better because at this point, it was pretty clear that the show was going to go 7 seasons.
Right. Yes.
And so they go into it with the expectation that we're going to develop this character over 7 seasons. It would make sense to be a bit more prepared. It doesn't surprise me in terms of television in the mid-90s that there would be this attitude of like, well, you know, Native Americans are just, you know, it's just this group of people because, you know, I live in Asia and you see this a little bit less so, but you still see it in American television today. And back then you always saw it, or you most often saw it, that Asia is just Asia, you know, Japanese, Chinese, Koreans, everybody's just the same, all the way to the point where you'll see a movie set, like a big budget Hollywood set that's mixing Chinese and Japanese elements in the environment together because they don't know the difference. The designers don't know the difference. They didn't bother to find out. And I think you see that dealing with Native Americans as well. But what surprises me is that you would think that Star Trek, just as a franchise, would try to avoid doing that. And especially when you have a character in Chakotay, you would really try to avoid doing that. And what you do, like you said, pick a tribe and then hire someone from that tribe to be your advisor. And then you can develop the character and it would be true to that tribe's customs and cultures and beliefs. And then you could extrapolate that to what it would mean for someone hundreds of years in the future who has that ancestry, but, you know, wasn't actually born on Earth and in that tribe and also.
Yeah, I think part of this comes down to the idea almost of, I think, you know, the mid-90s were a time in which I think the idea that you might offend somebody was just really hold. And so therefore they thought that they would be less offensive if they just kind of created this amalgamation. And in the end, that's actually more offensive because you're not taking seriously these people and their beliefs and their history. And again, I just think, you know, mm-hmm. Chakotay is not a bad character. And, you know, Robert Beltran's a great actor. I think he has plenty of places in the series where he does get an opportunity to shine. And so it would have just been much more interesting to really have him be a person. And again, I think to back this up for what I'm saying, right? The character of Keira Norris is incredibly powerful, and that's because you buy her as a believer in the prophets. And it's because of the way in which the whole series of Deep Space Nine is able to build that religion and make it make sense to us as viewers, and then show her devotion to that. And you just don't get that here. And it is disappointing that's the case. And it's disappointing, too, that this will be a thing that will continue to kind of recur in Voyager, where we try to reach into this, you know, bag of Native American tricks, and it just never really shines the way they hoped it would. And, you know, because even thinking about the episode in general, the way in which you utilize the medicine bundle just becomes so much more kind of scientific instead of feeling much more spiritual and interesting in that way. It's like they were afraid to take the risks in that sense that Deep Space Nine had begun to do with its Bajoran spirituality and everything. And and really what they're hearkening back here to, I think in many ways, is more of the TNG vein of storytelling where if we're going to use something somewhat spiritual or whatever, basically we're just going to materialize it. We're going to kind of almost strip it of its spirituality. And that's really what ends up happening here. You know, I mean, it's like nothing about this really has anything to really do with Chakotay's cultural roots or his Native American heritage or, you know, the medicine bundle or any of that. Like all of this becomes just a classic Star Trek sci-fi story.
And it could have worked on the Next Generation. I mean, they could have had
this episode literally feels like a Next Generation episode in not good ways.
They could have been transporting someone of Native American ancestry to somewhere, and then all this stuff happens, right? And and that person could just fill in. So I think you're right. It's that fear of offending people in particular at this time in the mid 90s in American culture, when political correctness was like really coming into form a lot. I even remember like politically correct bedtime story books that were being published at this time. And I think that is what's going on here. I just think that Star Trek shouldn't be afraid and hasn't always been afraid to offend people by delivering commentary on something. You know, the original series was a lot, I think, less concerned about that.
Yeah, for sure. I 100% agree. I mean, you know, the original series obviously was creating commentaries on all sorts of things, from racism to the Vietnam War to, I mean, it, you know, the amount of issues that it was willing to talk about, I think, were extensive, which, you know, as we're talking, and you know, we've gotten to the 60th anniversary of the original series, and we'll be excited to dive into that rewatch here as that premiere date comes up there, I think in September. And so that's going to be great. And it'll be fun to revisit those episodes and be able to talk about them in that way. But all that to say, here, it's just one of those places where by playing it safe in this way, you don't actually get what you hope for the character or for the story. And, you know, I think that's one of the kind of, as we talked about, you want Voyager to be telling stories that only Voyager can tell. And because we've already pinpointed that this is an episode that legitimately could have been an original series episode, it could have been a Next Generation episode, and it probably could have been a Voyager episode, it probably could have been a Deep Space Nine episode done better with maybe, you know, a prophet angle. That's where you're just like, okay, this episode isn't doing anything for us that allows us to explore what makes Voyager different. You know, as we've talked about in this the rewatch here, the promise of Voyager. And this episode does not deliver on any of the promises of that. And it doesn't even deliver on a promise to actually help us understand these characters more, really.
Right, right. So stripping the Voyager aspect of it away, I guess, the story itself, what did you think about the mystery and just how the story they're trying to tell from the mystery standpoint came together?
I think that it's fine. But, you know, I've said this in many shows when I'm trying to describe something, but it's just like aggressively fine. Like there's nothing to stand out in the episode, really. None of the performances are really standout performances. You don't have anybody kind of grabbing this by the horns and making it something off the page that it's just not. And I hate saying that because, you know, as we move through this first season, there's definitely been episodes that have really caught my attention, and I've really enjoyed rewatching and getting to experience again. And this is just one of those where I'm like watching it and I'm thinking to myself, oh my goodness, like I've kind of seen this story so many times and this one's just not adding anything interesting. So,
yeah, I think that's the thing is that when you've seen this kind of story so many times, when you get to the next instance of the story, it doesn't impact you as much. This reminds me of something like, let's say on The Next Generation, like Conundrum. It's that kind of story that's fun to watch. I think it's a fine story. And it's something that if I want to have an episode on in the background, I might pop that in. I might pop this one in as well, because it's that kind of story. But they're not breaking any new ground. The only way they could have broken new ground in this story is if they had done something more with the Chakotay angle, with the Native American angle, which they didn't do. So what we're left with is a typical Star Trek mystery story where the crew's acting weird because someone's been possessed by aliens, and then you've got other aliens who are trying to get into the ship, and the crew's got to find a way to get out of everything. And that's where we are. So it's just a typical average story. It's not bad, but it's not exciting either.
Yeah, and I mean, it's one of those things, too, because having seen this before and then rewatching it, it wasn't like in the rewatch there was anything that made it a fun rewatch, really. You know, I think that's one of the frustrating things, too, is that, you know, there are a lot of episodes of Star Trek throughout all of the series, right, where it's not the best episode ever, but you can really enjoy the episode and really enjoy the rewatch. And part of that is usually because of what they're doing character wise. Right. And here, I think it's just one of those places where all of the characters are not given anything to really just sink their teeth into. To make it interesting. And again, there's really nothing in the episode that deals with the characters themselves. We don't really learn anything about them. You know, we'll talk about the Hollow Novel aspect here in a second, but I think that's really the only place where there's a moment where a character does something that is a character moment that tells us something about that character a little bit. But the rest of this, I think they're trying to do that with the Chakotay thing, and even with B'Elanna kind of having some understanding, I guess you get the sense of how close they maybe are as characters or whatever. But because that side of things falls a little flat and they don't even just really lean into that as much in the first place, I mean, we move so quickly away from all of those character moments just to kind of continue this weird mystery story of, you know, characters acting weird and us having paranoia and all this. And again, it is like a bag of cliches that gets dropped in the episode for Star Trek. And it's just not one where they are able to even utilize any of those cliches, I think, to give us anything interesting for these new characters. I mean, again, this is the first season of Voyager, and when you give these characters that are brand new to us as viewers at the time this storyline that does nothing for them and really doesn't do anything really for the series as a whole, it just becomes, again, like one of those episodes where you're like, yeah, it was an episode.
Yeah. I think this is what happens when they come up with an idea for a story. Like they want to retell. I think what was this one? Like the Agatha Christie novel that was, it was as a movie, it was called 10 Little Indians. And I think it's that kind of thing. Like they wanted, they have this idea, and you hear Michael Piller say this often in the comments that he gave for the various books and publications that were done back when the show was being made, where like they have this idea to do something. It's like the ex post facto, right? They had the idea to do, to kind of retell a film. And when you start with that idea and then you try to wedge your characters into the idea, then it's hard to really give the viewer something more about the characters that develops the show itself, like Voyager itself. And I think you see that a little bit here too, where like if they had started with the characters and then built into this mystery that they're trying to tell, that would have worked quite a bit better.
I think it's a really good point. I think it's one of the things to which Voyager at its most frustrating can kind of suffer from. And I think that's not creating stories for characters first, for character growth right. first, for not thinking character first and just kind of thinking plot or idea first.
Yeah.
And, know, I think when you do it the other way around, one of the most important aspects of that is that you find that the audience gravitates more towards the stories because they're being invested in the characters. I mean, really, and we've talked about this before, but that's just kind of storytelling 101. That's how you mm-hmm. pull people into a series. You know, there are series that I love, which one of the things that they do incredibly is that in the first episode, every single character in the show feels real and vibrant, and like you know them, you can kind of almost picture in your mind where that storyline might go for those characters.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, you know, the first season of a show is all about trying to then flesh that out. And again, mm-hmm. it's just one of the places where because they, I think, went with idea first and character second or third in this episode, you can actually really feel it, and it mm-hmm. just doesn't come off the way you would want it to. So,
mm-hmm. Well, I would say, like, to say something positive about their approach, I think they came up with plot first and then character next, but the character angle that they really came up with was the Chakotay one, which they were scared to actually dive into. It feels like they were, and therefore that didn't work. So then all you're left with is the plot, and we're going to have Starfleet characters play out a recreation of a mystery that's already
and that's
known.
One of the, I would say this, anytime that you allow fear to control your storytelling, that is where you're going to get a less than great story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you look at the sequel trilogy of Star Wars, that is a place where they were so scared of the original series characters taking over, you know, the original trilogy mm-hmm. characters, you know, overshadowing. That was their great fear with Luke Skywalker. You know, in the end, when you write from fear, it actually hurts your story instead of just being like, no, this is what our story needs, you know? And so I think from my experience of, you know, watching so much television and so many movies and reading books and everything, it's like when you're just not afraid to tell your story the way it needs to be told, that's when people really, I think, respect and gravitate towards your show or your book mm-hmm. or your movie, and they really end up loving the characters.
Well, let's touch on, as a last point here, let's jump over to the Hollow novel, because this opens the episode. And another thing about this episode is that, you know, you've got, what, 40, this is the first season, so I guess you've got closer to 45 minutes to work with. And you use, like, the whole cold open. You're in this Victorian England Hollow novel with Janeway that has nothing to do with the story. And we talked about this earlier in the season with Eye of the Needle, that they had this idea for Janeway to have a Hollow novel, and it was going to be an Eye of the Needle. And they shot this, but they didn't use it there, so they pushed it. And they pushed it to this episode. And, you know, I guess the idea is that because the holodeck works so well on the Next Generation, they want to carry that over to Voyager, and they want Janeway to be able to have these moments in the holodeck the same way that Picard did. But you've got to figure out what would work for Janeway. And she says in her captain's log, sometimes it's a good idea to get away from being a captain for a while. To that end, I've started participating in a new holonovel. The setting is ancient England. And apparently her escape from being captain is to jump into a story where someone's going to boss her around now. And so it's like she's tired of being in charge, so she wants someone else to be in charge of her. And again, like you always say, that's not Charles in charge, but someone else is in charge. And the setting, well, okay, there's more to this story of how they came up with the whole novel, but before I reveal that, tell me what you think about this gothic novel version that they came up with.
What I find most interesting is that basically she leaves her real life to go to this fake life, and she ends up playing a story which is very similar to the life that she's leading, where she's kind of thrown into this position or takes this position to be over, you know, children who probably don't even want her around, and a you know, the man of the house in Victorian England who doesn't really want to be there or even have children. And it's like there's a similarity in the sense of that this holonovel has a mirroring effect for who Janeway is and what she's going through at being thrown into this really uncomfortable position, 70,000 light years from home and with a crew that's a hodgepodge that, you know, would not have been her first choice. And so that just seems like such a strange, like, I don't understand what in the world they were thinking by making this what would really captivate Catherine Janeway. It's a very strange choice. And honestly, as you mentioned, you tag it at the beginning of this episode. It literally has nothing to do with the rest of the episode. And it just feels like a complete waste of space. Basically like, oh, we don't have enough story to fill the rest of this story because it's really not that interesting enough of a story. We'll tag this on there. And it feels like an afterthought for the episode, and it feels like an afterthought for the character. And again, as we mentioned earlier, when you're not servicing the characters first and foremost, that's when things just don't work and people don't gravitate towards it. And this, I don't think, does anything for Janeway. And it's just not interesting.
Well, I think there was an effort to service the character of Janeway. I think that was the goal. It's just that what they decided to do with it didn't really make sense, and it didn't connect with viewers for sure, which is why we only see this a couple more times. But yeah, it may be that they didn't have enough story, and so they decide, like, this was sitting around. We already said they didn't put it in Eye of the Needle. It was kind of sitting around, and this was their opportunity to tack it on because they had some time. They could put it in. And also, I think they felt like, you know, we're now getting late into the first season, and we want to establish that Janeway escapes to the holodeck, and we got to get it out there, you know, as soon as we can. So it may have been a little bit of that. Apparently the original plan for her getaway to the holodeck was not this gothic England thing. It was going to be the Wild West. And Janeway was going to be a pioneer woman who was heading out into the Wild West in a covered wagon. She had a husband, and she had children, and she was going to lead this rustic lifestyle in the Wild West, and she was going to do things like build campfires. How exciting would that be? So, and then apparently there were two snags. One was that Kate Mulgrew did not want to work with horses, which I find interesting when you think about William Shatner and his love of horses, and now here you've got a captain, an actor playing a captain who does not want to work with horses. And then the other, I think, legitimate thing is that if they did the Wild West as her holonovel, they would have to go out on location to shoot anytime they did it. They would have to spend a lot of money on the horses and the handlers. And I think logistically, it would be very expensive to do this Hollow Novel every time. And so they decided to pull back and do something that would be a lot more manageable. But the result is that what they ended up doing was certainly not interesting.
Well, and it's interesting.
Would you have been interested to see her build campfires?
Well, the thing about that is that it actually feels more in line with, I think, what they're trying to do, which is to mirror her situation, but at the same time tell you something about Catherine Janeway, which, you know, she has this man at home, Mark. You know, they have a life together. And who knows, maybe she did want kids. Maybe this is a desire of hers. Maybe, you know, the idea of being away from Mark is terribly disturbing and lonely for her. And in some ways, I think that storyline actually kind of references, you know, what they do with Fairhaven, where they're trying to give her relationships because she can't really have relationships with any of her crew, even though we'll get into that later. But, you know, I think that is just one of those places where that would have actually been a much more interesting story. And I think you could have utilized that in a way that would have really told us something about the character, but allowed them to reveal a bit of their character that they won't show to anybody else, right? But we then as a viewer get to see it. The fact that she has this ultra maternal side, that she would enjoy being in a relationship and having that type of family. And again, I also think this is probably one of those places too, where it's like in the 90s, you were probably afraid to do that because, you know, it was all about girl bosses and every girl had to be the girl boss. And the last thing they wanted was a family. And yet I think by stripping that femininity away and stripping away that part of us as human beings, right, is something that is a disservice to women. The same way it would have been a disservice if they hadn't made Sisko a father.
All right. So, well, what are your final thoughts on this episode and what's your rating for this one?
Yeah, I mean, this is, it's not a terrible episode. It's just an episode that is. And in that, I mean, I think I'll give this 2 disembodied spirits out of 5 because it's one that I will probably just not ever really watch again until my wife and I are watching through Voyager and when we get there, and I'll need to show it to her. Otherwise, I just don't think it's a great episode, and it's just not an interesting episode. And even episodes that aren't great can still be interesting, and this one doesn't have either of those things. And so what about you, Chris?
Well, like I said, this is an episode that I might throw on in the background when I just want to have a Star Trek episode playing, because it and that's not necessarily a compliment to the episode, because the reason I feel that way is it's one of those standard Star Trek episodes where I just feel like, okay, I've got Star Trek on, and it's kind of like comfort food in a sense. It doesn't mean that it's particularly intriguing, but I do think that they did a pretty good job of, on a first watch through, of concealing Tuvok's role. I don't think it was clear that it was Tuvok until later on. In fact, there was a point at which I felt it was Janeway. And then the twist that it was actually Chakotay who was having people do a lot of things, I thought was also a pretty good twist. So when you rewatch it, you can go through and then watch for all the clues related to Tuvok in particular. So that's why I think it's not a bad story. It's not a bad episode. It wasn't executed poorly. It's just very vanilla. It's just, as we've said, you know, it could work on just about any Star Trek series with a few adjustments to who's playing the role that Chakotay plays and who the aliens are they're trying to get on the ship and so forth. Yeah. So, yeah, those are my basic feelings about it. We didn't talk about Neelix. You know, you do see Neelix's jealousy raging a little bit and how protective he is of Kes.
And the less said about that, the better.
Yeah.
So,
although at least he takes Kes's mental abilities a little bit more seriously here than he has in the past. Yeah. But But yeah, anyway, I guess I'm going to give this one 5 mysterious aliens trying to get into the ship. All right, everyone, we'd love to hear your thoughts on Cathexis. If you'd like to share those with us, there are many ways for you to do that. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. It's there to extend the conversations beyond the podcast. So if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. You'll see a post for this episode there on the timeline, and you can share your thoughts with Matthew and me right there. You can also send us email if you like. Go to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there. Choose to send to a show and choose to the journey, and that will come to us by email. And of course, you can find us everywhere in social media. Our username is trekfm. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we'd love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not adorning your room with animal remains, where can people find you?
Well, I do love, you know, all of my stuffed animals. But when I'm not doing that, you can find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02. Of course, here on the network, you'll find me outside all the great Star Trek talk we're doing. The 602 Club, we talk about all of those franchises outside of Star Trek that we love. So check that out. It's a lot of fun. Hope you'll enjoy that. You can also find me over on the Nerd Party Network with a couple of shows. One's called Owlpost, about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series. And then I'm on Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills as we talk about Star Wars each and every week. But Chris, you're not trying to figure out if that was you who pushed that button on the microwave to make the popcorn or not. Where can people find you?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's not me because it got burned and I'd never do that. when I'm not doing that, you can find me elsewhere on the network doing all those shows with you, as you mentioned. Larry Nemechek and I have a new episode of The Ready Room out where we look back at Strange New Worlds Season 3. And also you can find me in the back catalog on many shows from the past 15 years if you'd like to hear my thoughts on a wide range of topics across the Star Trek franchise. And of course, you can find me on social media. My username everywhere is C. Brian Jones, letter C and Brian with a Y. Blue Sky is where I'm most active, but you can find me everywhere, so please send me a note. And if you'd like to help us keep this rewatch and everything else we're doing on the network going, we could definitely use your help to find out how to support the network. Please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We would not be here without your support. So thank you to everyone who is supporting the network now. Well, Matthew, I hope you're ready for next time. And I hope you bring both your faces as we talk about faces.
Well, that's confusing. So I guess just set course for home.